For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined by Bob Phelan. Our co-host Nick Stevens is out this week, but Bob and I are happy to be joined by a good friend of the show, a frequent guest. He is the host of Locked On Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. He is Connor Newcomb. Connor, good to have you back on the show.
Yeah, it is great to be back, becoming the regular thing in March. You guys come on, we do the minor league draft. I come on here, we do the predictions, and we get the cross-pollination, hopefully, of if we're still at the point where somebody listens to one of our shows and doesn't know about the other one, we can continue to grow that audience.
Yeah, absolutely. It's nice to have these yearly traditions now as we get further cemented into Birdland, and it's a lot of fun, especially as the team's getting better.
So the way it's going to work this year is we're going to split our predictions up into two episodes. We're going to start in this episode with a look at individual player performances. So if you've listened to our shows in the past, you know we always do over-under on player statistics. We're going to have that, and we're also going to try to guess debuts for certain prospects as well in this part of the episode. Part two is where we're going to focus on the Orioles as a team, where they will finish in the standings, how far they will get in the playoffs. That's going to be later on this week. But first, we'll dive into this episode with the big news in Birdland, certainly not the big news in baseball from late last week, but the big news in Birdland, which is that Jackson Holliday, despite by all reasonable measures a good spring, will not make the opening day roster. He's going to head back to AAA Norfolk for the time being. And Connor, just we're going to throw out the first prediction here, which is when will Jackson Holliday make his major league debut? But as you make your prediction, give us your thoughts on the Orioles' decision to not put Holliday on their 26-man roster to start the season.
Yeah, I definitely won't go as deep into my 30 minutes of this as I did on Monday's episode of the Locked On Orioles podcast. So if you want even more, you can check that out. But in terms of prediction for when he's here, I mean, you never know what kind of threshold the Orioles are going to set for plate appearances against lefties and innings at second base after the things that Mike Elias has said. I'm going to guess somewhere very close to when Adley came up. Now, that was a different circumstance because he did have the tricep injury that pushed him back a little bit, but I'll say something like May 20th. I don't have the schedule in front of me. It'll most likely be a home game, I would think. So the closest home game to May 20th is going to be my prediction. I just think at that point, like, you're looking at least 6 weeks in the minor leagues that can give you some sort of, you know, benchmark for plate appearances, especially against lefties, some sort of benchmark for playing second base, some sort of just getting more plate appearances in AAA in general, because he's only got 91 so far. And those are the big reasons why that Mike Elias stated over the weekend why they decided to send him down to AAA. I mean, if anyone follows any of my content anywhere, I've been pretty clear how I feel about this, which is that I thought Jackson should have been on the opening day roster. I actually think I was less upset by this than I was with Grayson Rodriguez not on the roster last year. And of course, Rodriguez, when he did get called up kind of in emergency form, did struggle, went back down, and then became one of the best pitchers in baseball in the second half. But I just feel that, and I understand the arguments of, you know, he didn't look ready at the plate. He wasn't maybe ready against lefties. He needs more work at second. Like, I get all of that. And I even get the thought of, you know, can you play Jackson Holliday every single day on this roster right now? I think yes, but you could argue no. But the base of my argument is Jackson Holliday is one of the 13 best players that was in Orioles camp. And the Orioles, clearly after trading for Corbin Burnes, are trying to win the World Series in 2024. And if you're doing that, I would think you want the 13 best players in camp from the get-go, from the opening day roster. And that's just not what they're doing here, because whether it's Tyler Nevin, whether it's another roster move, waiver claim that comes in to take that final spot, that player is just not better than Jackson Holliday. And I get that there's more to it about his readiness and the roster fit and all that stuff, but I want to see the best players out there. And as a fan, I've said this too, I want to see Jackson Holliday run down the orange carpet. And I want to see him from day one being as good as he can be, because he's going to be a special player.
Good answer. First off, it's spring training's over. I gotta switch the hat real quick. I know this isn't the official hat either, but I was genuinely surprised when the news came out that Holliday was being reassigned to minor league camp, because we've been saying, just reading the room, the vibes, the comments, it seemed like he was going to have to play himself off of the opening day roster. And he obviously did not do that. Crushed a home run off a lefty. But other than that, I think he struck out in 9 of 15 at bats against them. So, I mean, I think the Orioles are scheduled to see 4 or 5 lefties in the first 2 series against the Angels and Royals, which leads me to my prediction for when Jackson Holliday is going to debut. It's going to be Tuesday, April 9th at Boston. You can extend Jackson Holliday's spring training into AAA season by about 2 weeks. And if he comes up before the 15th day or 16th day of the season, if he's caught up, he can still be eligible for the Rookie of the Year bonus pick and all that stuff. Because I think last year when Grayson Rodriguez didn't start and then came up with the injury due to Bradish, he became eligible and got his full season of service time, because there's a rule if you're up before the 15th day of the season, then that happens. So I think that Tyler Nevin, he's going to have a nice little 6-game stint with the Orioles and be replaced by Jackson Holliday at Boston, or maybe a 9-day stint for Nevin at Boston on the 9th of April. And honestly, I was more upset after I saw the news that since Holliday didn't make it, I thought for sure Kobe Mayo would have made it with his awesome spring and the way he's looked, but he's not far behind either. So I think we'll be okay in the end.
I just wanted to jump in and give a date. May 18th is like the closest home game that would make sense. It's a Saturday 4 o'clock game against the Mariners. There is a Friday game at home, the 17th, but that is, I believe, a big giveaway day. And I feel like the Orioles would want to spread out all that stuff for the maximum ticket sales as well. And a Saturday game is always good. So give me May 18th for my official prediction.
And I randomly have tickets to that game because of my flex plan. So, hey, I wouldn't hate that too much.
So I, first of all, I like that you guys are kind of divergent here, where Bob is going early in the year where he could possibly get get the Orioles to draft pick. That's something I could see the Orioles maybe deciding, not to mention you have to account for the possibility we saw at Grayson Rodriguez last year, where there's an injury that forces him to arrive sooner than expected. And then Connor has that being a little bit later. I'm closer to Connor, and in fact, I'm going a little bit further than Connor is into the season. I'm going to say May 31st, which is a Friday night against Tampa Bay at home. And the reason I'm going with that is that the best baseline that I can give for Jackson Holliday is Gunnar Henderson. Henderson had 295 plate appearances at Norfolk before he was promoted to the major leagues. Holliday, by comparison, as Connor mentioned, has 91 at AAA. Last year, he had 259 plate appearances at Bowie, and it took him about a month and a half to get to that number. So roughly the same time frame would take him into mid-May. The burden of having to get as many plate appearances against left-handers as possible, not to mention the innings at second base, and the way the Orioles' home schedule falls, where they've got a long road trip from May 20th through the 26th, then a series against Boston to start off after that at home. I think they push out a little bit further, so I'll say May 31st. And as for my reaction, I was surprised. And while I get the reasons why the Orioles left Holliday off the major league roster, the fact that he's not on there after the spring he had kind of makes me question what his chances actually were going into camp.
Yeah, I wonder if they were expecting, because you can't go into spring training, I guess, expecting everyone to stay healthy. Maybe they expected him to maybe need to be on the opening day roster. But if everyone was healthy, this must have been the plan all along. Now time will tell if it's most likely at least partially service time manipulation, but time will tell if it's like, hey, we're facing lefties, let's get creative, maybe a little too creative for the beginning of the year, or if it's going to last longer.
Yeah, I know that Sig Meidel is not the person that ever wants to talk to the media, and I think that's a little bit of why he might never become somebody's main GM or president of baseball ops, but I wonder if maybe Eve Rosenbaum can get in Mike's ear and just be like, look, you, some of the things you say, you don't have to say. Like, they're not actively harmful, some of the things he says, but it's just like, you don't have to continue putting these expectations out there. They're coming from you. You are the guy that people are looking for to make these roster decisions. I don't think in the winter meetings, Mike Elias had to say Jackson Holliday has a really good shot of making the opening day roster. Like, I'm sure he was, I mean, he was prompted by a question about Jackson Holliday. It's not like he just came out and said it, but I think an answer of Holliday's a very talented player. We hope he'll help us out this year. And, you know, he's going to come into spring training competing for a big league spot. Like, I think you can say that and everybody's like, all right, Jackson's got a chance. It's just been the wording. And that's honestly, at this point, with the amount of great things that Elias has done for this roster, that's kind of my main gripe with Mike Elias, is just his framing of things to the media. And I think that's something easier to fix than an issue with roster building. So I would hope the Orioles can kind of nip that in the bud at some point.
Yeah, if that's our biggest complaint, though, that's honestly not too bad. But yeah, that could definitely be where maybe one day when Mike Elias gets promoted to president and Eve is the new GM, maybe we'll get some better, more realistic quotes, but we shall see it. Let's move on to the next question, the next prompt. Any moves, trade, waiver, claim? We saw it last year with Danny Coulomb. Between now and the first pitch of opening day, whether it's Thursday or Friday, Connor?
I think yes. I think one of the reasons why, despite processes of elimination telling you which 26 players the Orioles will go to Baltimore with, I think the reason why we haven't, not only have we not gotten the official opening day roster, which most team, I don't think any team has put out their official roster yet. That's not an Orioles specific thing, but we haven't even heard, like, Ramon Arias has been told he's made the roster. We haven't heard Jacob Webb or Keegan Aiken have been told they made the roster. Even though you look around and you're like, well, there's only 8 relievers left in big league camp, so it's got to be these guys. I think they're looking for it. And to be quite honest with you, I wouldn't be surprised if the right-handed hitter came on waivers, that they would scoop up and maybe take that player over Tyler Nevin if they thought it was a slight upgrade to have on the roster for 6 weeks. I actually started putting together a little bit of a list of the guys that have already opted out or could end up on waivers because they're trending towards not making their team's roster and they're out of options. It's not a full list yet, but there's some interesting guys like Birch Smith and Luis Perdomo and Drew Pomeranz and Brent Honeywell and Johan Ramirez, who are just like some interesting relievers who, if one of those guys did end up being the final guy in the bullpen, like, it would be an intriguing arm for the O's. I think definitely it'll be at least one pitcher or hitter, and it could be a pitcher and a hitter that they pick up and add to this roster before opening day.
I agree for all the reasons Connor said. I'll go with one pitcher because I think if you look at that bullpen, while you only have 8 relievers in camp, the Orioles do have options with Keegan Aiken. Jacob Webb has not had a good spring, so there is some room there for change if the Orioles feel like there's a guy hanging out there they want to get. So I'll say yes.
I will say yes as well. I'd honestly be more surprised if there wasn't some type of transaction before the first pitch on opening day. Exactly what it is, I'm not sure, but I know, or I'm assuming, that they're really shopping hard for see if anyone wants to give us some decent value for a Ramon Arias before the season starts, or whether it's just another right-handed bat. Maybe is Tommy Pham still a free agent? Maybe they could sign him to take Nevin's place on the bench, or a pitcher as well. But yeah, I think there absolutely will be a move before Thursday at 3 o'clock.
We'll go on to the next one now, going back to debuts. Who will debut first this season, Jackson Holliday or Coby Mayo? I'll start with Bob.
I think it's going to be Coby Mayo. I think, like I just said, Ramon Arias being shopped, I'm assuming it, there wasn't not a lot of like affirmation for Ramon Arias being on the roster to start the season. And honestly, there still really isn't. I think that they're going to try their hardest to trade Ramon Urias and open up a spot for Kobe Mayo. I think he had an amazing spring offensively, defensively. He's ready. He's as ready as could be. He's a little bit blocked at the moment, but whether it's a trade or an injury, maybe early in the season, and to kind of hedge my bets with my previous prediction with Jackson Holiday, maybe he lasts longer like you guys are saying, then I definitely think it would be Kobe Mayo in that case. So yeah, give me the surprise third baseman of the future.
Yeah, I'll take Holiday. I just think in the order of operations, prospect-wise, he's going to come up first. Now, one of my bold predictions on my show was that Kobe Mayo would actually be the Orioles' best rookie this year, so it would be helpful for that prediction if he came up before Holiday and started accruing those stats. I do think that if Holiday is early to mid-May, Mayo would be more like early to mid-June. And they'll just kind of ease in the infielders. It's kind of something similar that they did last year where Westberg came up first and then they got Couser to the big leagues and then they got Kerstad to the big leagues and they kind of eased them each in a little bit and gave them each a little bit of time where, and Brandon Hyde even talked about it. He was asked about it a lot last year and kind of said, listen, you know, I don't want to have too many brand new guys come in at one time and have to, you know, parse through the lineup there with a lot of rookies at once. And so I do think it'll be one after the other, about a month in between. And I just think, just with the prospect pedigree, it'll be Holiday before Mayo.
Oh, also, just to add on to my prediction, if they trade Ramon Urias, whether it's before the season starts, soon after, or like I was saying with Holiday, if Mayo comes up before mid-April, he'll also be eligible for Rookie of the Year draft pick.
I'm going to say that Mayo gets there first, and the deciding factor for me is that he has more AAA time than Holiday at this point, much more AAA time, actually. He's already had 267 plate appearances there last year. He's also gone a long way towards settling one of the big question marks, which is his defense. I think the Orioles have to feel like they feel comfortable putting Mayo at third base at least some of the time after he was promoted, whereas before spring training, I don't know that that would have been the case. And then I also feel like with Mayo, this is where being a right-handed hitter is going to come into play and be a favor for him over Holiday, because the Orioles have a lot of left-handed bats. While I might not have a good left-handed bat to play second base, Mayo also offers power from the right side that's not easy to find really anywhere else in this organization. So I think that that's going to help him out. I do agree with Connor that they're going to be staggered. I wouldn't expect them up here on the same night or even within the same two-week interval, but I think Mayo gets here before Holiday.
Okay, similar question here. Not who will debut, but who will be called up first between Heston Kerstad and Kyle Stowers? Zach?
I'll go with Stowers. I think now that Kerstad is back in AAA, the Orioles are going to want to work on his defense a little bit more. And while Stowers is not significantly better than Kerstad in that regard, he is a little bit better. And you also have to wonder that if Stowers had not gotten hit by the pitch in the face not long before Kerstad got called up last year, if it would have been him and not Kerstad that was on the roster late in the season, at which point we wouldn't even be having this conversation right now. So I think Stowers gets up before Kerstad.
I'll take Kerstad. I think, and this is something we all knew and most people were talking about throughout spring training, it was like Kyle Stowers keeps hitting homers, and it was kind of like, how many homers does he, I mean, I talked about it on my podcast. I was like, how many consecutive home runs would Kyle Stowers have to hit to actually get an opening day roster spot? I decided on 10 straight at-bats it would have to be for Stowers to actually be giving a roster spot. I just think we realize where he is in the pecking order right now with this Orioles team, and I think it is below Heston Kerstad. And while I think there is a point to, you know, with Kerstad being down, maybe it's to get some more time, whereas Stowers is kind of mostly graduated from AAA at this point, I just think that Kerstad is the better player, and they're both on the 40-man. And so, you know, at this point, you're using options for them anyway. You're bringing them up to the big leagues. They're kind of in the same roster situation. And at that point, you just take the better player. Now, it's all about fit. You know, Stowers is a better defender, so that's certainly something to look into if you have to call one of them up. But I also feel like, I mean, at some point here, if the Orioles can sell high on Kyle Stowers, maybe he never has the chance to come back up with the Orioles this season.
That's an interesting point. Yeah. I will say Stowers, but not because I think he's higher in the pecking order. I think just if there's an injury, you can call Stowers up and not have to expect to play him every day or most days. He can be an actual bench player. Whereas Kerstad, I feel like it's going to take Ryan O'Hearn maybe getting hurt or underperforming for him to come up. And I think, like Zach said, they're going to want to work on that defense a little bit more, get him some consistency. Yeah, a lot of the Orioles prospects and just players in general had great springs. I wouldn't say Kerstad had a great spring, so give him some time to get in the swing of things, get heated up. And yeah, I think they're going to want him to get more reps at first base so he could be more of a first base right field, whereas Stowers could be left field, right field, center field in a serious pinch. So yeah, I'd say Stowers.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Who is the first pitcher called up from the minors? And I will give the both a little bit of leeway with your responses. You could just say first guy up from AAA overall, or the first legitimate prospect to come up from Norfolk. Either path you want to take, and I'll start with Connor.
Can I take both? Can I get an answer for both? Because I think they're different, because the prospect one is much more fun to talk about. The pitcher one's just kind of a guess. It's like, which guy with options are they going to call up when they need an arm? I'm going to say that the first guy we see is Nick Vespi. And I think that is because what we saw from him last year, I think, was really intriguing. What the Orioles did with Nick Vespi last year, they started to stretch him out in Norfolk, and it never became a point where he was a starter. And I don't think that's going to happen. But remember, he had multiple appearances in the big leagues where he went two innings plus with the Orioles, and he had many more in AAA, like the month before they started doing that in Baltimore. So I do think, and maybe it's not those first 3 weeks because the O's have so many off days, they could use Irvin or Wells as a long man in a pinch, you know, because they have so many off days. But we get into late April, the O's get in a weird spot, you know, Dean Kramer has to leave the game in the second inning, something happens with the bullpen, the off days are over, you need somebody who can just eat some innings in a game. And the guy that's the easiest to call up to do that right now is Nick Vespi, because I think the Orioles believe that he can do that, and maybe it takes a little more time to build him up to that, but he did have a couple of multi-inning outings in spring, which is helpful to be built up there. And so I just think he'd be the first one of those up-down relievers to get called up. In terms of the pitchers that we'd be, I think, a little more excited for, I'm going to take Chase McDermott. I actually think that none of the three of them will have like a gigantic innings-wise impact on the team this year, but I do think the three being Armbruster and Povich and McDermott, I do think that McDermott will have the biggest impact and will also be up the earliest, because I think sometime after the All-Star break, the Orioles just say, throw him in the bullpen, do the DL Hall plan, like let's let it rip out of the pen, and I think that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I completely agree with that aspect of it. I have two different answers as well. I know I just said in our mailbag that I think we all did that Armbruster would be the first guy up out of those three, but man, did McDermott look really nasty this past week at the tail end of spring training. He looks pretty ready to contribute in some way or form. So yeah, I'll go with Chase there. And my head says Brian Baker for the pitcher that's not a prospect. And my heart says Albert Suarez, just because I absolutely loved what that guy showed in his time in spring training. And I want to see what those fastballs in the upper 90s look like in the majors during the regular season.
So I'm going to go for the first non-prospect called up. I'm going to say Vespi for some of the reasons that Connor mentioned, and the fact that he's left-handed, I think, is going to help him out. And then for the first prospect, I'm going to go with Wanderson Charles, because I think that Charles' fastball is major league ready. It's just a matter of him locating that pitch more effectively. And I could easily see a scenario that the Orioles find themselves in the spot they were in last year with Yennier Cano, which is, we're down a few arms. This guy looks good in camp. He's got good stuff. Let's put him out there and see how he looks. And hopefully, much like Cano, Charles is able to stick on the roster after that. So I'll go with him.
Very cool. And we kind of have these tandem questions. So kind of similar, who's the first prospect positionally outside of the top six, which is Holiday, Mayo, Basayo, Kowser, Kerstad, Norby, to get called up slash make their MLB debut, if any? Maybe there's not one, but Connor?
I don't think anybody below that list makes it. It's hard to even pick out like who it would be if there was one, because the depth at the top of AAA among the guys that are either have already been in the big leagues or are almost ready is insane. And when you look down the list of hitters in AAA that now starts with Jackson Holiday and includes Kobe Mayo, Heston Kerstad, Kyle Stowers, Connor Norby, it's like, what spot would you have to be in for someone other than them as a hitter to get called up? So I'm going to say no. I mean, maybe something would happen where, I don't know, Dylan Beavers just put on such a show that he leapfrogged all these guys and made it to the big leagues by the end of the year. That would be the closest one, or like something weird happened where they needed Hudson Haskin to play the outfield. Yeah, I don't really have an answer here. I don't think anybody else will make a debut.
So we're talking about pitchers and position players, correct, Bob, or is it just position players?
I said just position, but since we already included the pitchers in the previous question.
Yeah. So out of position players, I kind of agree with Connor that I do think it's going to be a little bit tough for someone to crack that list, especially because, you know, you look in a lot of the more intriguing hitters coming into this year, either in the lower levels of the system, guys like Mac Horvath, or they're at the upper levels and they're blocked. And so someone like Connor Norby, if I had to go a little bold here, I wouldn't be shocked if we saw Billy Cook in the majors this year for two reasons, speed and versatility. So you could bring him up as a pinch runner. You could bring him up to fill in for you at a couple of positions. I don't think he graduates. I don't think he comes anywhere close to that, but if he puts up good enough numbers in AAA and you need someone who can fill in around the infield or fill in at a few outfield spots for a week, Billy Cook wouldn't be a bad guy to call on.
He took my answer. Billy Cook, he was my guy. I think he had a couple of nice at-bats late in spring training too. So I'm very curious to see how he does in Norfolk. And like you said, he could play second base, all the outfield positions. So if you need someone short-term, last minute, give Billy a call and he'll cook up something nice for you.
I think for Cook too, I mean, he's already 25 and he has the tools, but you know, at this point it's like when he's 25 years old and he's not one of your tippy top prospects. I mean, he's outside the top 20, top 25, I would think, for most people, even in the Orioles system, just because the system is so deep. And so at that point, it's just like, if you identify him as someone that can help for 2 weeks, I don't think you mind kind of starting his clock, especially, again, now that the Orioles are at this point where you're trying to win the World Series.
How long will Ramon Urias be on the roster? We'll start with Connor.
Oh, I mean, it could be like one more day, right? I mean, that's not out of the question. I would say, I think Urias survives. I did just say Kobe Mayo sometime in June. That kind of seems to be the flip-flop that would need to happen. So maybe till June. I don't think Ramon Urias will do anything that like causes fans to say, well, causes the more level-headed of fans to say, we need to DFA him off this roster right now. Like, I think Ramon Urias is a perfectly fine bench player. But when you're looking around this roster and just, okay, you're looking for speed off the bench, you've got Jorge Mateo. Okay, you're looking at somebody who can come off the bench and play the outfield for you. You've got Colton Kowser. Okay, you need somebody to play multiple positions in the infield. Well, you've got Jordan Westberg. And so you're looking around at this team, and Urias is kind of odd because he's a reverse splits righty, so it's not like you can sit him in there against lefties and he helps you, and you have so many good left-handed hitters that it's hard to get him in the lineup all the time against righties. I really do love Ramon Urias, and I'll say sometime in late June, I think the Kobe Mayo flip and Urias is the casualty, and I do think what would happen is it wouldn't be a straight DFA. It would probably be a DFA, someone cuts the line to get Urias and the Orioles get some cash. They get maybe a lottery ticket minor leaguer. He's also a player where he might be number one atop this list of more valuable to the Orioles than any other team. But I think once they think Mayo's ready, and as long as they trust Westberg to play those multiple positions in the infield, he becomes much less valuable to the Orioles. And I don't think he's a starting everyday level player in the big leagues. And it's like, what can you get in trade for a utility bench player who's at best a little above league average bat? Like, he's just like a really solid player for the bad Orioles. And now in the good Orioles, you kind of look around and you're like, he didn't do anything wrong, but I think by June, that ship could have sailed.
Exactly. Yeah, I think when you're a good team, 101 win team, you start poking a little bit harder and try to find the weakest parts of the roster. I think that's why Austin Hayes gets a little more flack than he probably deserves. Same with Ramon Arias. It's just because those seem like the places where we could continue to upgrade. I'm tempted to say he never even officially makes it onto the roster, let alone comes off of it. But yeah, I think before June 1st is a good call.
I'm going the whole season. They haven't moved him to this point. I think that they have found a way to work up prospects when they think they're ready. They did this with Jordan Westberg last year. Jackson Holliday and Kobe Mayo are going to force their hand one way or another. And as we get into on the next question, I think that's how Mayo's roster spot is going to clear. And with Arias, I think that the problem with trading him is that for a lot of the reasons that Connor touched on, reverse platoon splits, right-handed bat. The thing that I would add on to that is that he is defensively best at third base, but he has a second baseman's bat. He just has a very weird profile. And I also feel like the Orioles would not be maximizing value for him because his defense at third base took a step back last year. So let him go out, get 350, 400 plate appearances, play at third, get the defense back up a little bit, and then in the offseason, maybe you get someone willing to give you a lottery ticket or a bullpen arm for him. But I think he's on the roster for the whole year.
Yeah, I think he's still got 3 years of control, so like that could be appealing to a team. And he has been close to an everyday player for the Orioles before, and he has produced with the bat before. Like, he is such an interesting player. Obviously, on a rebuilding Orioles team, you're like, get this guy in there every day. Like, let's see what he can do. A lot of people think that, like, the turning point for the O's getting serious, I know a lot of people feel that jettisoning Jorge Mateo to wherever. But for me, it's like, you can always validate Mateo on the roster because you're like, well, just wait till October when we put him in a pinch run. He's going to win a game for us. Arias is also just incredibly slow for a utility player. Like, utility players should not be in, like, the 10th percentile in sprint speed. I don't have it in front of me, but Arias is slow. Like, he runs like J.J. Hardy. And so I just worry about the maximizing the value. I think for Arias, that is actually the first roster test for Mike Elias and his crew of, are you willing to not maximize one player so that you can maximize another and the talent on your team? And I think at some point in the middle of the season, they're going to hit a crossroads with Kobe Mayo and Ramon Arias. And it's going to be like, do we want the upside? And we want to get this guy who mashes baseballs onto our team, is going to be a big future piece. Or do we want to continue to hold on to this guy because we can't get what he's worth to us on the trade market? And I think that is going to be a really interesting crossroads to see for the Orioles. Because to this point, I mean, they've maximized everybody. They maximized Tommy Malone. So, like, it's going to be tough for them to make this decision. I think that's going to be really telling what they decide to do with him.
That is an excellent point. And as fans, we're always going to want to take that step sooner, I think, than the front office. And it's worked out for them in the past. But I think, like you said, there's going to be a point where it's like, you just got to do it no matter what. Because, like you said, Ramon Arias, he's a good player. He's such a weird player because he's like slightly above average bat. Like, he has a good glove, but I don't know. Like, just visually, it doesn't add up. I don't know. He's a weird player, but a solid player for sure. Like you said, he would fit in perfectly with the Hanser Alberto Renato Nunez Orioles. But yeah, good call there. And my question is along the same lines. How long will Tyler Nevin be on the roster? Start with Zach.
I'll go a month. I think that he, with the number of left-handers the Orioles are going to be facing on the front end of the season, will get his fair share of opportunities early on. And if there's one thing we know with Tyler Nevin, he can hit Triple A pitching, but Major League pitching has been a real challenge to him to this point. Nothing I have seen in spring training really makes me believe that he's going to take that big step forward. So after the first month where you've worked through this slate with a lot of left-handed pitchers, not to mention some weak opponents, and given him the opportunity to see what he can do, I think they'll feel comfortable moving on. And, you know, there's also a scenario where he falls somewhere in the middle, where he's not really good, but he's not terrible either. And you could get something for him if you put him out on waivers. So I say a month.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I think the reason they haven't announced he's on the roster is because they're going to bring in a different right-handed hitter for a month. So I'm going to say 4 days from now, but 0 days on the actual active roster on opening day. And I love Tyler Nevin. Like, I have been a huge Nevin supporter. And he had a great spring. Like, kudos to him. The Orioles went back and got him. I don't know. It's not connecting in my brain that we've gotten to this point that Nevin's going to make the opening day roster. And it's nothing against him. It's just, I can't believe we're here. And I think, like, again, I talked about it earlier with the roster. Like, you look around and you do the math and you say, okay, there's nobody else in camp. Why haven't you publicly told this guy what you publicly told all the other guys that are on the team? I think it's because Elias is still shopping. And Brian Anderson is out there, and he's not a super high ceiling guy, but he's probably better than Tyler Nevin in the big leagues. So if you want to bring in Brian Anderson for a cheap deal for a month, like, I could see them doing that. There's going to be some hitter they find that maybe they roster for a bit before they get Holiday up. So I'll say none. And yeah, I mean, the comment there about carrying three first basemen, I'm unsure how much first base he'll play, but the weird thing about Nevin is, like, where will he play when he's in the field? Like, his defense has dropped significantly since he was a minor leaguer. I don't trust him at third. I don't trust him in the outfield. And the Orioles don't have any innings at first base. So it's like, is he here to DH against lefties? Are you really going to roster Tyler Nevin to DH on opening day against lefties? I think they're going to find another righty before opening day.
I literally think they have Tyler Nevin to DH against lefties for the first week of the season. I think his time on the roster is days, not weeks. And like you said, it could be zero, because I do think they're probably looking for someone better. But if it doesn't happen, I think they're content to roll out Tyler Nevin as the DH against lefties to start the year. And I guess there's, like, do you want your bench to be guys who could be starters in the league and you're rotating them in? Or do you want your bench guys to be bench players that you don't mind just leaving on the bench for extended periods if need be? Maybe a mix of the two, but Nevin sincerely is the latter half of that.
Does Ryan O'Hearn sustain last year's success, Bob?
Oh, that's so tough for me. I do believe in the hard hit rate. He doesn't walk enough. Is the power really there? He can play maybe some corner outfield in some easy, like, left field in Boston, right field maybe in Baltimore if you need to. DH, can't hit lefties. I'm just taking a long time to say I don't think so. I think he'll be better than he was as a Royal before he got to the Orioles. I don't know if he can continue what he did last year, reach that level consistently at least. But we'll see. He's going to get a chance.
You almost, as a successful hitter, can't walk less than Ryan O'Hearn did last year. Like, looking at his walk rate, which was like 3%, and looking at how he produced at the plate, for a guy that didn't play every day, but if there was a righty on the hill, O'Hearn was in the game. And it's kind of insane that he walked as little as he did. Now, it helped that he didn't strike out at an astronomical rate, but that's pretty crazy to have the production that he did. I actually firmly believe in Ryan O'Hearn. I think the changes he made are legitimate, and I think Ryan O'Hearn is going to cause the Orioles to have a really tough decision when it comes to his team option at the end of this year. I think he's going to find a way to stick on this roster all season, and he might end the year, just because the Orioles have so much talent, as more of a pinch hitter. And I think that's okay. And I think that's an important thing to have when you get into September in the postseason. I think, you know, he could be a much less problematic Delmon Young for the Orioles in the postseason this year. And I think that's super helpful too. And I don't know if that means he's going to hit close to 300 all year and hit fourth for the Orioles. That's probably not going to happen again. But I think he's well above what he was in Kansas City, and I think he'll be good enough to stick with the Orioles all year and still be a guy who, I mean, I felt like this last season. When Ryan O'Hearn came to the plate in a clutch situation, I was like, I feel good about him more than probably 50% of the team, if not more, that he's going to come through for the Orioles, and I think that feeling can continue through this season.
Looking at the projections on FanGraphs, and I'll just give one from Steamer here because this is pretty typical of where they have him right now. 256, 307, 445 slash line with a 106 WRC plus, a walk rate of 6% with a strikeout rate around 23%. To me, that seems about right because he was had a batting average on balls in play of 340 last year. You have to figure that mark's going to come down a little bit. He didn't walk very much, but the numbers I just read off, while not at the level of last year, are good enough for him to stick on the roster all year. So he's going to drop off a little bit, but he's not going to come crashing back down to earth either.
Yeah, completely agree. Let's get into Jorge Mateo. What will his positional breakdown be by the end of the year, Connor?
I think he survives the season. You can't kill Jorge Mateo. You just can't. That speed is too enticing. And the fact that he might be able to play multiple defensive positions well keeps him on the roster. And people forget that the Orioles are going to hide him so much from right-handed pitching this year. Like, he's going to go weeks without facing a right-hander. He had a 108 WRC plus against lefties last year. He can still produce a little bit against a lefty. You just got to hide him against right-handers. And I think they have the depth to do that. I would say he still sees a little shortstop, even though they're saying, you know, Gunner's kind of the guy. I think when Jackson Holliday's here, he's at second. I think Mateo is still your backup shortstop because he's still so good. Even though he wasn't like Fielding Bible Award level last year, he was still very good defensively at shortstop. I think we'll see some center. I think we'll see some second. I think we'll see some left and right field. I think the breakdown, he will probably play, I'll say mostly, let's go mostly shortstop still because that's his position, but then right behind it is center, right behind it is second, and then the two corner outfields.
I'm going to agree with Connor on every point. He does stick on the roster all year. I think he moves around those positions. I'll say shortstop the most, center field, second base, third, and then left field, third, just for the speed, or fourth, just for the speed factor, and then right field after that.
I don't even need to answer. You guys nailed it. So, spot on.
All right, this will be our last prediction prompt before we wrap up this episode with the over-under section of this. So, in this one, breakdown of games started for Cole Irvin, Tyler Wells, John Means, and Kyle Bradish. I'll go with Bob to start this one.
I will say 5 starts for Cole Irvin before John Means takes over. Maybe he'll get, I'll say 8 because maybe he gets a few later in the season as well. I'll go to John Means from there. I'll say 22 starts for John Means. Tyler Wells, I'll say 15 starts. And Kyle Bradish, I'll say 20 starts.
I'm going to go pessimistic here because it's protecting my feelings. I'm going to say 2 starts for Kyle Bradish. And I think that is a comes back and it's not going as well as we thought situation. That's just setting me up to be pleasantly surprised, hopefully. But at least I didn't say 0. There's one point this offseason I would have said 0. We're up to 2.
2 might be worse, honestly.
Yeah, no, it's 100% worse because 0 means, you know, in 2 weeks they just put him under the knife. Whereas 2 is, we're not seeing him until 2026. I will say Irvin, one of my bold predictions was Irvin makes close to 30 starts and we're not mad about it. So I'll say 25 because we're not doing bold predictions, just regular ones. I think he just finds a way to hang around in the rotation. Jordan Montgomery, there's a name. I will say for Tyler Wells, he bounces very much in and out and gets 18 starts. And then John Means. Who knows what John Means right now? I'm going to say 14 for John Means. I'm worried about John Means in a different way than I'm worried about Kyle Bradish. I'm not worried about Means in terms of like how completely healthy and if he's going to be able to pitch at all. I think he will. I just think they're going to slow play him even more than we think this season and either try to preserve him or use him out of the bullpen some. I think they're going to get more interesting than with Means than we think.
So I worked backwards and basically figured out how many starts I think will be made between Corbin Burnes, Dean Kramer, and Grayson Rodriguez, filled in the rest of the rotation from there, which left me with 67 starts to go around. I think Tyler Wells makes 23. That's slightly more than he made last year when he made 20. Irvin will match his start total from last year with 12, and then you'll get 10 starts each from Means and Bradish with a combination of players from the minors and a trade acquisition filling in the remaining spots.
Okay. So I guess let's just rapid fire some over-unders to end this half of the episode. Over under 18 home runs for Adley Rutschman, Connor.
Over.
Over.
I say over as well.
Over under 5.2 WAR for Gunnar Henderson. Bob.
Over. Let's had just to jump in this early.
No, you
hammer,
got to. You got
hammer
to.
The over. Hammer the over.
Yeah, I agree. Over. He's going to be in the MVP discussion. So
over for me as well.
Oh, yeah. Mr. 30-30, Cedric Mullins. So we're doing a little stolen base home run total here. Over under 26 stolen bases and over under 18 home runs.
Under 18 homers and over 26 stolen bases.
Same for me.
I'm going to say over for both. I think Mullins is going to have a nice bounce back season despite some people being a little bit worried.
Over under 30 home runs for Anthony Santander.
Contract year Santander, over. Yeah, I think he's going to push high 30s.
I will say a push, 30 exactly.
I'll take the over.
Ryan Mountcastle, 25 home runs.
Under, but I think this season is his best overall statistically at the plate.
I'll take 25 on the dot. Why not?
I'll say slightly under.
Jordan Westbrook, 425 plate appearances.
We might have to pull out the projection sheet for that one. Let's see.
I'll say a little bit over.
Well, the Zips depth chart projections are 427. And I'm assuming you pulled it from something like that. Or you're just a whiz, Zach, which could be definitely possible as well. 425 plate appearances. Under. I'll say under. Not a lot under, but under.
Over.
Austin Hayes, 550 plate appearances.
Under.
Over.
Yeah, I got to go under. He's always hurt. Maybe this year they'll finally IL him instead of letting him play through it.
Craig Kimbrel, over under 25 saves.
Your stomach and your head and your legs and arms are not going to feel good after all of them, but I'm going to say over.
Yeah, I agree.
Over. Yeah.
Corbin Burnes, 3.50 ERA.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty well on the Corbin Burnes AL Cy Young train, so I'll take the under, especially I think Corbin Burnes specifically, something about him, the way he's talked about arbitration, the way he's talked about the Brewers, him in his contract year with what the issues Boris had getting pitchers money this offseason, like Corbin Burnes, I think, is going to make sure he's getting $200 million next offseason.
Under. I don't think it's even close to 3.5. It's well under.
The projection was actually even a little bit higher than 3.5, but I agree. Smash the under. Despite the spring training stats, he seemed extremely happy with where he is at heading into the season. So,
over under, Grayson Rodriguez, 3.75 ERA.
That one's tougher. I'll say slightly under for that one, which is still a very good season.
Yeah, I agree. Probably closer. I say in between 3.5 and 3.75. So like a little bit under.
Under.
Last one, Dean Kramer, 180 innings pitched.
Over. 200 for Dean this year. Put it on the board.
Over.
I'm saying under. I think he'll have like 160, 170.
That does it for this part of our predictions. Connor is going to join us for part two of this predictions, which is going to focus on the Orioles, what we think they're going to do in the regular season, if we think they're making the playoffs, and if so, how far they'll go. Connor, we're going to have a few days between episodes here, so can you tell our listeners what to expect over at Locked On Orioles?
Yeah, Monday's episode that was out already went through the all the roster moves from the weekend and the Jackson Holliday decision and my thoughts on it and why some things made sense that Michael Elias said about the reasons why and some kind of didn't. Tuesday's episode is kind of something that maybe doesn't fit when you're 2 days away from opening day, but it's one of the biggest thing parts of news in Birdland. Kind of a remembrance of the, you know, back and forth and complicated history and life of Peter Angelos will be coming out on Tuesday. And then Wednesday kind of gets you ready for opening day on the pod. Hopefully we have something close to an opening day roster to talk about. We will have a new owner, I believe, to talk about on Wednesday as well. And then Thursday after the opening day game, live recap episode to get the season started.
I thought you were going to say Tuesday was in remembrance of Pepsi products at the yard.
Yeah, not a soda drinker, but I will say if I had to, I'm taking Coke over Pepsi. So
that does it for this part of our predictions episode. You can tune in later this week for part two. In the meantime, you can check us out on our many social media channels, including Facebook, Threads, Instagram, X, TikTok, and be sure to head over to YouTube, subscribe to our channel. And as a reminder, if you're a member of our Patreon community, you can expect new bonus daily coverage later this week when the Norfolk Tides begin their season. You're not going to want to miss that. If you're not a patron already, sign up to become one. You can get a little taste of what it's like by joining our Discord community, which you can find a link to in our show notes. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Sweden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, part of the Believe Podcast Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.